You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1% so you can amplify and transform your life and your business today. I'm excited for my guest, Nicholas Kuzmich. He's an international speaker, creator of Art of Lead Generation, and founder of NicholasKuzmich.com. He is best known as the world's leading Facebook advertising strategist and for having the highest ROI in the industry, up to over 30,000%. Wow, we're going to have to see how that works for sure.
Yeah.
He works with A-list clients, including top thought leaders, New York Times best-selling authors, top Inc. and Fortune companies, providing strategic and oversight and fully managed marketing services. He specializes in using his proprietary contextual and congruency method, which creates mass influence on social platforms. I'm excited today to welcome Nicholas to Making Bank.
Hey, Josh, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I've just been excited. I've been following you online for a little while, and then some of my good friends, Keith and Dan Martell and everything, you've been connecting with them, and so it's an honor to have you on the show today.
No, absolutely. The honor is all mine. Thanks for having me.
Well, I guess tell me a little bit about your background and, you know, what kind of got you all started with online marketing as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, you know what? I wish I could say like I popped out of mama, born entrepreneur, like DNA, like I had a lemonade stand and all that kind of stuff. And that wasn't, in fact, the case at all. Entrepreneurship, I think, was kind of thrown on me. And again, I use the term entrepreneurship a little loosely. I mean, to me, true entrepreneurs are like the Elon Musks of the world who are changing the world through what they do. I've got my little lifestyle business here and it's serving us well. But I think it was just kind of thrust on me because I'm an only child. I saw my dad have his first heart attack when I was 4 years old. And most of my childhood was plagued with me spending a lot of time in hospital with dad. Both parents are immigrants. And so, you know, they did what they can. They did have their own little convenience store business that they ran together until I was 17. When I was 17, dad had another heart attack bad enough to take him out of commission. So that meant he had to let go of the business. Mom had to find work. And there's a feeling, dude, when like your mom, who's, I guess she was around 50 years old at the time, would go to a job interview and come back crying, saying, I didn't get the job because I can't speak English properly. So something turned in me and I'm like, you know what? I will never, ever, ever let this happen ever again. And I made a promise to myself and my mother that day, and my father for that matter, that they would never have to worry about money and kind of life. And so I was forced at 17 years old to be the primary breadwinner of my family. And I was figuring out how to do that. And unfortunately, when you're kind of in that situation, you're kind of set up for a lot of like scammy type stuff. So when I got when I get the email that says make $1,000 an hour, I'm like, all right, yeah, let it go. Yeah. And then so God, it was the first little while was like joining all these like weird multi-level marketing things and like survey companies and stuffing envelopes. But through that journey, I came across, you know, what's commonly known as online or digital marketing or internet marketing. And I realized that there was an opportunity there. So, I mean, to make a really long story short, I bought a few courses. I tried to figure the thing out. I failed miserably over and over and over and over and over again. But I got to the point where I was able to make just enough to pay the bills. And that kind of opened my world up to this world. And that was kind of the beginning. So again, I you know, for the most part, I don't wish entrepreneurship upon anybody. It's a long journey. You and I both know it's not an easy journey. It's not filled with Lamborghinis and multi-million dollar houses and chicks by the pool. That's what it's being presented as. But it's a difficult journey. I don't think everyone's cut out for it. And I think the general entrepreneur kind of industry does a disservice to everybody else who paints the picture as it's all glamorous. However, that being said, I would not trade it for the world. It's created a lifestyle that we're very happy with. And I just hate having someone tell me when I can eat lunch and when I can go home. Like that doesn't work with me. So it fit me perfectly. But that was kind of how it all began.
Awesome. And so I guess moving forward then, what you do now with the internet marketing, was that kind of your main first business venture? Or I know you're kind of doing the little different things along the way, or did you have several other startup companies that got you to that point?
I wish I could say I had startup companies. I'm not that smart. I mean, I had a few side hustles that just all didn't work. But I had a turning point several years ago when I was in an event. And again, look, I was a struggling marketing consultant. Like, I had understood digital marketing. I had some small little successes that kind of gave me the confidence to continue down that path. And so, you know, I was doing this internet marketing thing. I was a marketing consultant. I had a few clients. I was barely making bank. Everything changed a few years ago when I was sitting in a conference and somebody asked a question: how many people in this room use Facebook advertising for their business? And about 80% of the hands went up. And then the second follow-up question was, how many people have found Facebook advertising profitable for your business? And about 80% of those hands went down. And then something kind of clicked at me, because at that point I had been on Facebook since beta ads first came out. I figured I'd figured it out. And my assumption was, so did everybody else. And that moment is when I realized that I have an opportunity, a window of opportunity here, to slide into this space and to position myself as an expert, because I figured it out. It was working for me. And that was kind of the turning point. That was several years ago. And that's when I started to build a real business. And that's where we have what we have today. And it's evolved over the last couple of years, but that was a turning point for me.
Awesome. And what, you know, along the way, I guess, you know, what kind of challenges, you know, I know you said you had a little bit of wins here and there, you know, but what were those struggles that you kind of kept running into along the way?
Got everything.
Especially with the beta Facebook ads.
Yeah. I think the biggest challenges were, like, there's the macro and the micro. I think the major macro challenges were just confidence. It's like when you're stepping into it, when I'm stepping into a space, and I have these conversations a lot of time with people right now, like when you're stepping into a space where, like, you have a skill set and you think you could do something, and you listen to the guru who just says, hey, put up a video that does this and you'll get a 90% conversion rate. And you put up the video and the thing tanks, and you're like, I did exactly what the dude told me to do, but it didn't work. And I just had repeated experience of that over and over and over again, to the point where I was just like, is this worth continuing? But I think in my situation, I had no choice. What was I going to do? And where was I going to go? So yeah, I think the major challenges was the self-confidence of, like, working through the initial struggles of starting up, and how am I going to get paid, and how am I going to find clients? How am I going to build my client base, and learning the ins and outs of the business? Because when you go from side hustle to real business, where taxes and bookkeeping and account receivables and client management and all that, actually, like, stuff I had no idea about, becomes a reality. Those, just the whole learning curve of figuring all that out was probably the biggest challenges up front.
Cool. And then what was kind of that big win that you realized, like, man, you know, I know you were in the conference, you're like, okay, cool, people put the, but I mean, what was that big win when you first landed that client that, you know, really, like, man, I'm on it. Now I'm making some bank.
Yeah. So I had this idea of, like, I can either start from the bottom and then work my way up, or I can start at the top. And I figured starting from the top would be so much easier and so much faster. So I had to come up with a creative way to do that. So I came up, so when that clicked in for me, and I thought, okay, well, I have a market I could serve here. The Facebook advertising space seems to be a space I could serve. But again, that's a huge space. Like, everybody could use Facebook ads. So my next question was, and I had two criteria: how can I find an underserved segment of this marketplace who was also affluent? That was important to me. I said, who is an affluent, underserved segment of this marketplace? And I identified at that time, and this is years ago now, the tides have shifted, but at that time, it was the high ticket coach, consultant, thought leader, information marketer who was being underserved. And so I said, you know what? I put together a list of all my dream clients, the people I would die to work with. These were heroes of mine at the time. And it's an interesting journey where people go from heroes to colleagues to clients to students. And that was kind of my journey over the last few years. But these were heroes of mine. I put this list together and I said, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to approach all of them and I'm going to make them an offer they can't refuse. I'm essentially going to say, hey, this is what I do. These are my fees. But you only pay me after I get a result. If I don't get a result for you, you don't pay me. If I do get a result, these are my fees that you pay me for. And I think that's an important distinction, Josh, because a lot of people are like, hey, I'll work for free for you if you just give me a testimonial. The problem with that is that devalues your brand right out the get-go. So in this case, I said, these are my fees. I know they're not cheap, but let me do this for you. And if I get a result, then you pay me. And of all the people I reached out to, I got responses from two people. And I said, okay, I my back is in the corner here. This is my make or break. If I make this work, I know I can build a business around this. If I don't, I'm screwed and I got to figure out something else. Fortunately, we hit two grand slams for some pretty high profile people. And then the floodgates opened up. As soon as you got some good results for some high profile people, they tell their friends, they tell their friends, they tell their friends. I then took that, I leveraged it for my own personal brand. And literally in a matter of 18 months, we went from unknown to one of the top authorities in this space and one of the most sought after and highest paid people in this space. It was quite the journey, but that in fact was the breaking point when I made that offer and two people said yes to it.
That's really cool. Can you stick around for a minute? We just got to take a quick break.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I am Josh Felber. You're watching Making Bank, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, and we've been speaking with Nicholas Kuzmich. Just diving in a little bit about his background, how he got started in the internet marketing, some of the challenges. And one of the interesting things that he said is he went out and went to the top echelon of clients that he wanted to focus on, not just building at the bottom and saying, hey, I'm going to just take anybody that comes to me. I want these specific people from his, like, say, Dream 100 list, and went after him and picked up two of those. And so that's one of the biggest things is when you're in business and you're, whether you're just starting, you're moving along, is going after those people that you may think are your heroes, like you said, Nicholas, but being able to find them, connect with them, maybe even then have them, you know, have you work for them as a, on a consulting basis, you know, is a major step moving forward in your business. So I just want to welcome you back to Making Bank.
Awesome. I'm so excited to keep this going.
Well, cool. So one of the things I wrote down here, you said, hey, you know, pay me if I get you results. How'd you set that measurement for those metrics of like, hey, here's what a result is for you, instead of like, okay, you made a buck, so let's go.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, you know, and this is one thing you learn along the way being in client services, is which is one of our major businesses, is understanding what KPIs are and what you can control and what you can't. So when we, you know, initially when I was talking to some of these guys, I said, well, what's the most important thing to you? And at that point, and it's changed a little, but at that point, it was X number of leads at X number of cost. If you can get me leads at this cost, we would consider that a success because they know they can convert those leads into clients. And some people put some strong demands on us. And I got to be honest with you, when we were first in that space, I was like, I don't know if we could pull this off. But fortunately, the gods were in our favor. We worked real hard and we understood. Again, the one thing I knew is I understood the game. I knew the tactics. I just needed to prove them now on a larger scale. And understanding those metrics, delivering those metrics is what got us those results and got some happy clients from it.
Moving forward then, you know, you landed two big clients and yeah, kind of really kickstarted the whole business. Now, is your focus on client management still kind of at that level? Because I knew you do a lot of everything from teaching and seminars and everything else as well.
Yeah, so there's two streams to our business. One is our agency model, which is fully managed Facebook advertising services. That is a very boutique service, so we only take on 15 clients at any given time. Currently, we have a 3-month wait list for that, and it's by invite only. And when I say invite, I mean referral from either a strategic partner or a current client. So it's a really tight ship. That's filled up. You know, we can't serve anybody else in that space, and we're fortunate to be in that space. Now, the other side of the business is our consulting side. And so what we found was, you know, working with 15 high level clients at any given time was an awesome experience, but it really did limit my reach. I mean, I couldn't touch more people that I wanted to, and not everybody could afford to play at that level anyways. So I remember sitting in an event and having some conversations with my wife, and we said, well, what about if we just like teach people how to do what we do? People who may not want fully managed services, but want to run Facebook for themselves. Now, my only condition was I didn't want to do just another seminar, because there's millions of seminars and there's tons of masterminds. I'm like, I didn't want to do that. So I took a stab at kind of like the seminar business and said, well, we're going to do implementation workshops. In other words, you come with whatever you have, and by the end of day two, you didn't learn much. You actually implemented everything that we taught in those 2 days. So rather than leaving with a to-do list, you leave with a done list. And so we do those now 6 times a year, which are great. And those are limited to 20 people or 20 businesses at any given time. I do have a bit of a consulting practice where clients will put us on a retainer for certain hourly slots per month. And we consult with people that way. And so it's a nice blend. We do some teaching, we do some consulting, and we have our fully managed agency. And it just works really well for us right now.
Cool. And how big is your team to be able to manage all of what you're doing?
Yeah, so it's a beautiful question. So originally, you know, the aspirations and hanging around with like really high achievers, it's like you need to build $100 million business and you need to have a massive agency to do that. So at one point we had hired a whole ton of people and we had staff, and very quickly I wanted to kill myself. I'm like, I am not cut out for this. Like, I'm not cut out to manage people and right. like have people's livelihood bank on me and to worry about this person and so-and-so was talking about this so-and-so behind their back. I'm like, hell no. So we stripped that all down. We went from having tons of clients to only 15, and now we run a really lean and mean ship. So by that, I mean, we have zero employees. We have two partners, which is myself and my wife, and we have four outsourced locally, but they're four outsourced contractors who help us with various parts of the business, but that's it. So lean and mean. Now I'm excited to wake up. I mean, we got so much time freedom and not the headache and the overhead of all that other stuff. So yeah, very, very tight ship here.
And, you know, I think that's one of the biggest things is people look at, especially when they're starting a business or they're moving their business forward and they're trying to scale. I mean, obviously certain businesses, if you have physical products and things like that, you have to have,
right,
you know, a certain amount of people to help with things. But, you know, with the way you structured your business and everything, is not having that is a huge, I mean, I guess no burden on you now, and you can really focus on what you love and instead of all the other stuff.
All the other stuff. Yeah, I think it's an important point that you mentioned there. Like, A, we don't have the burden. B, we don't have the overhead. So if you look at our like profit loss, we're like 80% margins right now. So our expenses are only 20% of everything. But then more than that, I think, and this is a big shift that happened for me, and hopefully it'll benefit one of the viewers or the listeners. I was in this scaling up mode, and I always thought as a business owner, scale, 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 scale. That's the only way to go, up and to the right. And then I realized, well, maybe that's not the answer. And so for a while I was preaching scaling down. Like, that was my message. Hey, you don't need to scale up, scale down. And then I realized I didn't actually scale down. I netted up. And that's kind of a term that I start now using. So instead, I let go of headache clients. I let go of staff. I let go of all that. And now we charge way more money and we work with way less people. So my bottom line actually increased, but my workload heavily decreased. And that to me is netting up. And that was a perfect play for my specific business. And now all of our questions come around that idea. It's how can we net up even further without having to worry about all the traditional things that are attached to scale?
And I think that's an awesome term in the way you guys are looking at it, because as you're scaling, a lot of times is revenue goes up, but your net goes way down. And at the end, you're like, you do 10X and you're like, wait a minute, I only got $10,000 net left.
More. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that. To me, revenue equaled like profits.
Right.
Higher growth in revenue also like meant expenses and everything else went up, and profits almost stayed the same or increased a little bit.
Sure.
And it just wasn't worth the time or the effort for us. So. Yeah.
So what is your, you know, what is your focus on in the business? You know, kind of, is that, you know, your, I guess, our favorite part? You know, I guess it's probably the same thing, I would think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really my wife's role is kind of operations. She has a strong operations background and she's the kind of the engine that makes everything go. I'm kind of more the face and the strategic oversight. So anything to do with high level strategy, biz dev, anything that has kind of a front facing to the marketplace, that's where I get jazzed up. And also on the consulting side, I'm the only consultant. We don't have a team of consultants. So I'm the guy doing the consulting, the strategizing, and I'm the guy who's teaching in our implementation. And that's really what excites me the most.
Oh, that's awesome. Then, so you're actually there at the workshop overseeing everything that people are building and implementing right there.
Well, not even overseeing. Like, I'm looking over their shoulder and I'm saying, hey, change that and let's call it this way. I'm writing copy for people. I'm selecting images for people. And that's why it's a small, intimate environment where literally, and that's what people are essentially paying for. You could learn this stuff digitally, probably, but you're paying for the fact that I'm over your shoulder doing the stuff with you right there live and in person.
No, that's awesome. As you guys are, you know, building this and growing, I guess, what is kind of your next phase for, you know, where you see the business? Do you want to just kind of keep it in where it is now? Or do you, obviously you're not scaling, as you said, but.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And like, without getting too far into this and without upsetting people, we have zero business goals. We have no thing on our wall that says projections that by the end of this year, we want to be here. And that was intentional. And if we have the time, we can go into why. But more specifically, what had happened was we just realized that the more we're in the now and going with the flow and staying like agile and pivot, I don't like to use the word agile, it's a very corporate word, but very kind of with the flow. I mean, if you asked me a year and a half ago, would you be doing consulting and intensives? And my answer would be a hell no. But literally myself and my wife were at an event and just this idea sprung on me. I'm like, what about if we try this? 4 weeks later, we did our first intensive. And now, you know, 18 months later, or not even like 12 months later, is a major part of our business. And that all happened not because we forecasted that or not because it was part of the plan or we had some revenue goals or anything like that. It literally was birthed out of a weird serendipitous experience at an event. So I like that. I like being agile. I also realized that Facebook could disappear tomorrow. And if that's the case, what do we do? So for us, I mean, we're happy with the growth. We're growing 100% year over year right now. By netting down, which is a great thing.
Right.
And or netting up, sorry.
Netting up,
scaling
yeah.
Down,
scale, yeah.
And so, yeah, like goals, like we love what we do. I love what I do every single day. Does it mean tomorrow I'm going to love it? Maybe, maybe not. And if it doesn't, I'm just going to pivot. So, yeah, it's weird being in this stage of I just don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, but I'm really excited about that and I'm totally cool with it. So, yeah.
You know, and that's a nice thing I can see from you is you're comfortable, you know, in your position, because I think we as entrepreneurs, we end up putting so much stress and oh, I got to here's my goal. I got it 10 million this year, 20 million next year. And, you know, then it becomes not fun anymore. You don't want to wake up and go do it. And I think that's really awesome that you've put yourself in that position to be able to feel comfortable and happy. And you are good right now where it's at and how it's going and where you, you know, how you are waking up and operating it every day. So.
Yeah, I think the thing we all realize is that like the only constant in life is change. And that just happened so much in my life where I just got really comfortable in the place of uncertainty, but confident in the uncertainty. So I don't know what tomorrow will bring. There could be a shift in the marketplace. There could be a shift on platforms. There could be all sorts of things that could happen. But I'm comfortable with saying if we need to pivot, we'll pivot and we'll just figure it out as we go.
Cool. So tell me a little bit about, I know Facebook ads are your specialty and stuff. And I know we've had great success when we've had other different internet marketers on sharing some tips and strategies. Maybe give us like 3 to 5 tips that our audience can take and utilize, you know, in their business to help it.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, sometimes I get asked the question, like, what is the number one mistake that a lot of people make on Facebook? Because obviously we want people to avoid that mistake. And I think for the most part, and this is like a rule of thumb, not a rule of law, but for the most part, the straight line is not the straight line. And so here's what I mean by that. Oftentimes, if I have an event to sell, so I'm trying to fill an event, and then I have my prospects over here, I figured, well, the best way to get people to my event is put a Facebook ad to talk about my event. Now, here's the problem with that. And anybody I know who's ever tried that has lost money or barely broken even and scratching their head, why doesn't this work? Here's the reality. When we wake up in the morning, nobody wakes up in the morning like credit card in hand, like, oh, okay, I'm going on Facebook to buy something.
You're right.
Right? I mean, we go on there because I want to see what my friends did. The grandparents want to see what the grandkids did. Like, we want to see what's going on. Like, what did Trump say today or whatever? You know, everyone's kind of just trying to see, like, what the heck is going on. Nobody goes with commercial intent. And so you as an advertiser or an entrepreneur or a business owner, if you come onto a social platform, and this is my whole shtick. My shtick is called contextual congruence. And what that really means is staying congruent to the context of the marketplace that you're on. Facebook is not a commerce-driven marketplace. So if you as an entrepreneur try to jump on the platform with a commerce-driven mindset, in other words, how can I sell something today to someone who probably doesn't want to buy it? You're going to experience all sorts of heartache and pain and loss and all that sort of thing. So the greatest kind of takeaway to start with is if this is the end goal, i.e. let's fill an event or sell a widget or a product or a service, and here's where my prospects are, what is that intermediary step that I could use to bridge that gap without coming across too salesy? I think there's two golden rules of marketing. Golden rule number one is always give before you ask. And then rule number two is every step of your marketing process should be beneficial in and of itself. So that if someone never does buy from me, at least they leave that experience with an exchange of value. Like, oh, I got something out of that, even though I didn't buy. as a case study, for example, our 30,000% ROI case study that we love to talk about. It was a friend of mine by the name of Taki Moore. He has a great coaching business. He's brilliant at what he does. All kudos and credit to him for that. And his play was simple. He wanted to fill an event. Now, the first time he did this with another agency, the agency said, okay, let's set up an ad to try and fill your event. They tried that. He spent $80,000 in 1 month, and he made zero. Now, he recovered that supposedly over the next 12 to 16 months. They couldn't really track it if they did, but he feels confident to say they somehow made that back over time. He was a little gun-shy with Facebook. So he came to me and he said, Nick, we need to fill these events, but I'm scared because we lost 80K the first time we did this. How are we going to do that? So I said, okay, well, let's figure out what the intermediary step is to fill that event. Now, in short, it's what does your prospect need? What are your prospect's fears, frustrations, wants, and aspirations? What are solutions that they need, and how can we deliver a solution before ever asking anything of them? So the long story short is we came up with a content piece, commonly known in our space as a lead magnet. We came up with a content piece that literally solved his ideal prospect's greatest need. And our Facebook ads then drove them to a page that offered that content piece in exchange for a name and an email address. They got the content piece. It was truly beneficial. Taki's information, his content is stellar. They got that piece. And then on the back end of that, through a bit of a nurture sequence, we made an offer to say, hey, by the way, if you like this, we have this event coming up. And just because we just met, rather than paying full price for the event, why don't I meet you halfway? You pay 50%, I'll pay 50%, and I'll see you there so I can look you in the eyes and shake you in the hand and see how I can help you personally. That put a whole ton of people in the room. And out of all those people, a good chunk of them signed up for his higher ticket coaching program, which ended up, again, long story short, it's about an $1,800 ad spend we did for that. He ended up netting about 500K.
Wow, nice.
That's where we get a 30,000% ROI. But here's kind of the takeaway. The first time they did it, they went straight line. Event, ad, prospect, ad. The only shift was realizing that people don't necessarily want to buy from you if they don't know you. So what is that intermediary step? What is that piece of content that can really shift and move the needle for somebody? You put that in between and all of a sudden everything changes. So that would be kind of my greatest takeaway for someone who's looking to explore Facebook ads is don't use Facebook ads to sell anything. Use Facebook ads as a means to build a list, to build a platform, to build goodwill in your marketplace, and then to nurture someone in a forward motion towards the end goal, which is to buy your thing, sign up for your service, et cetera.
No, and I think that's, you know, definitely makes sense because, you know, like you said, people are on Facebook just to check things out and everything. So one of the things I know I've been playing around with a lot lately for our skincare company a lot is the whole thing with the now with the dynamic retargeting and the product catalogs and all that stuff. And that's where, I mean, we're seeing a huge, massive ROI from that. I mean, it's, I think last 30 days was like a $500 ad spend with like a 17 to 20K return.
And yeah, love it. Yeah. But I think the key to that, what you're saying, is the realization of like marketing 101 or sales 101 that most people don't buy on their first exposure to you, right? Someone needs several touch points in the process. And that's the beauty of retargeting. Retargeting says, hey, you're interested in this specific item. Let me show it to you again. And then when you do that, like, oh, okay, now it's time to buy. So that's a beautiful example. I love that.
But I think to your point too is that, you know, one of the things that we're doing is we're putting other touch points in there as well. So we have articles on, hey, you know, why is the toothpaste you're using, you know, making your
killing
system
you.
Talk, killing yeah. you, yeah. And, you yeah. know, and then testimonial videos is maybe like a second or third touch point. And
right.
then by the time they hit the website and come back, then it creates kind of this whole full circle loop for them.
Yeah, no, I love that because I think what people realize is that like at the end of the day, the product is the product and as good as it is, they're going to compare that with something else. I believe, and this is a great takeaway, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. I believe that in today's day and age on social, and social to me is just another way to say the internet because the entire internet is social now. To me, at the end of the day, the reason why somebody buys or transacts with us, I believe comes down to resonance. It's because they resonate with you or your company or your brand. And you create resonance by creating connection. You create resonance, like you said, by producing articles that speak to their needs. And the more of these exposure that they get to say, oh, this company actually gets me. Like, they're interested in me. I connect with them. They get me. It's not just a product to them. It's about blank. As soon as someone feels like they get me, I like this, then they buy. And I think that's the important element that you're bringing up with the articles and the touch points and the testimonials. That all helps to create resonance and connection. And as soon as you land resonance, people start pulling out their wallets and buying. Again, not necessarily because of your product, but because they feel connected to you.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess one other question too I just had was with the whole Facebook Live and the extra push that, you know, Facebook is giving to that, are you using that a lot with what you're doing, or how are you positioning that in your marketing strategies for your clients?
Yeah, it's a great point. And the tricky part with video in general, whether it's Facebook Live or it's video ads or anything like that, is that the general population, clients or otherwise, are intimidated as hell by video. not everybody is so comfortable turning on their screen and just starting talking to
right.
it. So in full transparency, most of our clients haven't been able to utilize video and or Facebook Live. But for those who have, I think it just comes back to what we were saying here. At the end of the day, the reason why someone wants to transact with you is because they feel connected to you on some level. And the more you could do that, and that's the beauty of Facebook Live, the more you can do that with somebody, the better off you're going to be. So I would say capitalize on any tool that you have that allows you to further connect with your audience further. And the more you can connect, the more you can resonate, the more you can do all that, the better off. And this is a long game. But the more you can do that, the more following you have, the more transactions you'll create, down the road.
And I think that's a key point you brought up. It's a long game. Is most people like, oh, I'm going to get on, make $1 million in the next 90 days. And
from my one live, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it is a big strategy because, I mean, my wife does probably two on average per week, live videos, just talking about either a Q&A that came, a question and answer that may have come up, or just value points for people to help them enhance whatever they're doing in their life right now. So
yeah, no, it's a great point. If people can, I don't know if anyone's used this term before, but if people can remember that, like today, it's like a connection economy or a resonance economy. You just keep that back of mind in all that you do, you're going to be better off. It's not the old school days where you could force a product down someone's throat
right.
and compete on the level of price or this or that. You've got to really connect with the followers, and then you'll start to see those transactions happen.
Cool, man. Well, almost out of time here, so I just wanted to get what's your one piece of technology you can't live without?
So we live out of like Trello and Slack, so that's a great software. But other than that, my cell phone, without it, I don't know what I would do. Yeah,
you're like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I freak out. Yeah.
Cool. And any last insights you want to leave our audience with before we go?
Ah, geez. I mean, it depends on where people are at in their journey. I mean, if people are just starting out, is keep going. It may not get better, but you'll get smarter and you'll get more skilled, so it'll feel easier. If you're already kind of living at large and things are going well for you and you kind of reach your pinnacle, think about netting up. Sometime, like maybe consider getting out of the cycle of always scaling up and seeing if there's like other things that you can do to give you the time freedom, which is really the only reason we all got into this game in the first place, and to do what you need to do that way. So I think those would be the kind of two takeaways there.
Cool. And then just let us know where we can find all about you and your events and everything you're doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, everything is at nicholaskuzmich.com. I know it's not the most brandable name, Josh, so you're going to have to put that in the show notes somewhere.
It'll be a link on the side here.
Yeah, and then we also, I mean, or if you go to like Nick's blog, NICSBLOG.com/secret, that's kind of an easier thing to remember, and that'll give you access to some free trainings and various things that we're doing right now as well.
Cool. Well, really awesome. I appreciate your time today, and it was an honor to have you on Making Bank and be able to share your insights and experiences, with the audience and everything. So again, thanks, and I appreciate your time today.
Oh man, the pleasure was all mine. Thanks for having me, Josh. Appreciate it.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.